there's a competitive nature that's come into music, or maybe I'm just a bit more aware of it now, which doesn't really embrace a collective win, you know, not all the time. There's a thing called Ubuntu. It's something which comes from like African cultures where, you know, you all win together. You all kind of, you know, achieve things together. And I don't know about yourself, but when you've achieved something on your own and you turn around, there's no one to celebrate with, it's kind of a hollow victory. But if you can share it with someone, the struggle and the end result, and if it's good, you know, you kind of, it's something you can hold on to. And I think it just propels you to be maybe a bit more giving of love rather than living in a fearful state, you know.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, curiousgoldfish.com. There's magic in music on so many different levels, and it's one of the coolest aspects of doing this podcast, to learn, understand, and yes, be curious about how magic presents itself in a song, in a lyric, in a performance, or in a musician. One of the most magical aspects of music is the shared connectedness that you can feel, whether at a show, sharing a playlist, jamming with friends in a car. Music can connect even the most disconnected souls together into a moment of shared experience that can last forever. Connectedness is the heart of We Are All Fossils, a musical project created by a South African musician who's called Great Britain home now for 2 decades. The concept of We Are All Fossils is a unique one, and I'll let Daist, its founder, explain more in more detail in our conversation, but it's all about connectedness and shared community. There's a connectedness in his sound that on one hand is so recognizable, it feels completely comfortable, but it's also so unique that you kind of have to listen to it several times in order for it to sink in. I talked to Daist about all that and how he was able to throw original music together for strangers on YouTube. Those strangers would just give him a theme or just a couple of words, and he was able to write some original songs on their behalf. Again, music connected them, even though they were strangers. I found We Are All Fossils by listening to one of my favorite playlists on YouTube and Spotify. It's called Indie Folk Central, and I highly recommend it. I felt so connected to the music of We Are All Fossils that I reached out to him just cold and asked for an interview. He accepted, and I'm so grateful to be the first American media outlet to interview We Are All Fossils, who will surely have an emerging role in the singer-songwriter genre for a long time. I felt like I found a soulmate after speaking with him. We spoke for an hour or so recently. We connected through mutual love of artists like Sufjan Stevens, Damien Rice, and Gregory Alan Isaacoff. Again, music has a way to connect people, even complete strangers 5,000 miles apart. This is part one of that interview. He performs a song for us called Mountains, which is what got me hooked on We Are All Fossils to begin with. Part two will be published soon, and both parts will be posted on YouTube, as this is also the first video podcast episode in the short history of the Curious Goldfish podcast. My guess is that you also feel connected to Daist and We Are All Fossils after listening to this episode and his thoughts and just hearing him play his incredible music. We Are All Fossils. Let's dive in.
Hey Daist, thanks for your time.
Hello, thanks for having me. Very excited for this.
So it's a Monday. Tell me something good about your weekend.
I got to spend it with my two closest friends, and we all had like a bit of a catch up. We hadn't seen each other for a little while, so that was the highlight. Had maybe too much coffee, but don't regret it.
Really appreciate your time. So I came across you and your music probably over the holidays. I was streaming. There's a great channel on YouTube called Indie Folk Central, and every month they come out with like a playlist of indie folk songs from really all over the world. A lot from Australia, some from the States, and then Europe. And I just remember in the midst of a lot of really good songs, I actually had to go back and play yours a couple times. I think it was called Mountains, which I hope to talk to you about in a minute. But that's how I was introduced to you. It's a pleasure to talk with you, and I can't wait to learn all about you.
Oh, no, thanks. I mean, that playlist was so influential to how things changed for me. Rufus, Indie Folk Central, has been so kind with his support for what I've been doing. And I think if you went back and you listen to that track again, there's so many good artists that he works with and he curates. That's really kind to hear that, it stood out, because there's so many good things on there.
So tell us a little bit about your story. I think you're in Great Britain now, but you're originally not from there, right?
Yeah, no, I'm currently living, if you're familiar with the UK, it's in Essex, but if you're not, it's not too far away from London. I was born in South Africa on the East Coast in a place called Durban. Very, very beautiful, pretty much like a surfer's like haven, very nice, like beaches, Indian Ocean. It's incredible. I still wonder why my parents moved here and swapped the whole thing around, because summer, I was born in January, I had a summer birthday, and now I have like this really cold January birthday and just pining for something I used to know. I do love living here. It's really, really, really nice. It's nice to kind of interact with the different cultures and enjoy it for what it is. Being this close to London, it's quite multicultural. There's so much out there to interact with, and it's wonderful.
That's great. And how long have you been there?
So I think it's gone into 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Getting older now.
Yeah. Well, you can't be much more older than that. Are you in your 30s or what?
Yeah. 35.
Okay, cool. So your name's Dazed, but your stage name of you and the group is called We Are All Fossils, which is really interesting. I guess, what's the origin of that name? And then, what is there a specific meaning behind that sort of sparked everything for you?
I remember I was in between kind of projects with music. I used to do kind of a solo thing, which was a bit more poppier, or I wouldn't say pop in the traditional senses, but just a little bit a singer-songwriter with, more of those mainline hooks. And I started falling into like love with a whole different kind of music that was coming out. I felt like a name change was going to be there, and I don't really have the most like easily, I don't have a memorable name really. My full name is Jakob Dazed Olofsson, so that's not going to, do that good over,
Right.
I think even my English teacher got my name wrong, and then just they had a nickname for me that they stuck with, I guess, just to keep it safe. But yeah, so I was just trying to like find words that felt kind of right for where I was going. And I remember listening to Sufjan Stevens' track.
Oh, nice, yeah.
My John, My Beloved. And there's a line in there. Where he talks about fossils. I think it's the fossils that fall on my head, something similar to that. And I remember the word fossil just kind of jumping out. And I had a little note, bit on my phone, and I was trying to like, I remember putting all the random like words down. And I was like, well, these things are just poking out. And then it just kind of happened where I was like, I wanted to create a name that was quite unifying. And, you could, I think from being so like on my own with my name, it was quite individual. So I wanted to have something that was quite, unifying. And then We Are All Fossils was the first half of a sentence, like We're All Fossils in the Making is the full sentence.
Right.
But the beauty in that was for me that We're All Fossils is something which, once our lifespan and our time together has its expiration date, we all end up in the same place. And sometimes we can feel quite individual and not connected as the human race, but effectively we will be at some point in very similar states again. So yeah, it might be a bit morbid for some people, but I was like, that's a really strong kind of thing. So I could build a project out of that felt really in line with how I was feeling.
That's incredible. I mean, Sufjan Stevens is awesome, right? Like that's amazing. I would love to talk about Sufjan, and so hopefully we can come back to that. But
yes, please.
So is We Are All Fossils, is that like a name of a band? I've seen references to interviews that you've done where you sort of allude to it as a project. I guess,
yeah.
Can you expand on that?
I think from the way that it started, I was writing songs and I was interacting with a few different musicians, and labels sometimes do get in the way of creativity. Sometimes you cage your ideas too tightly and they can't grow. So We're All Fossils to me was just, it was a project that was just kind of evolving with who was around and who wants to be part of it and who's kind of just in tune with what's going on. It's not any massive pressures on who's involved or not. I do a lot of the music with my best friends and I interact with them and on like, the music's like the byproduct of the time we have together. And it's, I don't really ever want to change that too much because it's just, I've been in places before with music where you try and create things that you think people will like and they will enjoy. And at the end, you just kind of end up in a place where you don't want to be. So We're All Fossils is just an evolving project that I don't know what it's going to be, but I've enjoyed what it's been.
All right. That's incredible. And I think the point you made earlier around, you know, a community and sort of being connected, isn't that sort of the essence of music as well?
100%. And I think that's, we kind of lost sight of that as there's a competitive nature that's come into music, or maybe I'm just a bit more aware of it now, which doesn't really embrace a collective win, you know, not all the time. There's a thing called Ubuntu, which is, I think I'm like pronouncing that right. It's like, it's something which comes from like African cultures where, you know, you all win together. You all kind of, you know, achieve things together. And I don't know about yourself, but when you've achieved something on your own and you turn around, there's no one to celebrate with, it's kind of a hollow victory. But if you can share it with someone, the struggle and the end result, and if it's good, you know, you kind of, it's something you can hold on to. And I think it just propels you to be maybe a bit more giving of love rather than living in a fearful state, you know.
No, that's incredible. And then was this before We Are All Fossils or as part of it, you did, which I think is a pretty cool project called Songs for Strangers.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? Because I thought that was pretty unique.
Songs for Strangers was, there's a little bit of story before that, which I'll tell you, will give you a bit more insight as to why that came about. But I was in music, like writing my own stuff, but I wasn't too sure if I had a bit of a commitment issue, because I'd have all these goals, but I couldn't really piece together the steps to get to anywhere. And it always felt like a little bit of a circle of failure that I kind of found myself in. So I swapped the idea a little bit, and there's actually an accidental thing that happened that made me kind of change my approach. I watched Damien Rice, which is one of my favorite singer-songwriters, perform a song on Jules Holland. And I remember just loving it so much. I'm a huge fan of his, and it was a long time that he hadn't released an album, and I was like, okay, great. You know, I was like sitting there, I effectively felt like I had popcorn and I was just ready for this moment. Funnily enough, I don't know why I did it, but I took a video of the screen and then I posted it out on social media, or I posted it on YouTube or something, because I felt like it was a real moment for me that I wanted to share. And then the next day I remember getting like this cease and desist thing from a YouTube or something, like they're like basically saying you've done something really bad, you need to stop you know, doing this. But then I saw the numbers of how many people watched it, and I was like, oh, but there are people out there who are thinking like me and are interacting in my way. So I thought, I'm going to cover the song and just see if I can connect with them. And that kind of like had exactly the same thing. I got connected with a lot of people who had the same moment as me, and we had like our little, you know, like hopefully me and you are going to talk about Sufjan, and, you know,
yes, we've got this, yes, like definitely,
deep love for certain artists. And so I try to then make it so that my commitment thing, I can try and see if I can just challenge that. And I put forward that I would release a new single, a new cover every Friday. I used to call the series Fossil Fridays. And that would be my way of seeing if it's a commitment issue. So for a year I did these covers. And I did it, and I saw these numbers, and the best thing about it was the numbers didn't mean as much as the connection with the community and the people who interacted. And then I on the back of that was like, well, I'm going to message a manager of one of my favorite artists, or maybe it was a booking agent of Gregory Alan Isogoff, a guy called maybe Colin Keenan.
Okay.
And he replied, and he said, and this is the best thing that you could hear from someone. He's like, I'm really impressed with what's going on, but these are all covers. They're not about you. Like, where are you in this? And then I looked back, right, and I was like, well, yeah, where am I in this? So then I didn't want to lose what I was doing with the Fossil Fridays. with the people who are coming in, because it's hard for them to take the jump from an artist that they know and already love and then come into the world that I'm going to create. So I tried to create a middle point between us where I did like a video, and I just said, like, if you're watching this, send me a letter or an email or anything like that about any story you want, true or false, or you can keep it anonymous, and I'll write a song out of it, and just see how that's going to work. So that's how Songs for Strangers really came about. It was the way to still be connected. And in a weird way, you're writing with the people who are watching your videos. And I think the aspect of keeping it anonymous was really good, because then you can, there's this like truth that can come through. And there's, right. I will never forget those letters that came through. And then I think we released the EP a couple of years later. It took a little bit of work, but it was just a phenomenal journey. And I learned so much about telling someone else's story and how much you want to stick to it and not, you know, jack it up with your own ego or take the wheel a different way. It was a disciplined writing act, but I've learned so much from that.
Yeah. So somebody would just send you a couple of words, a theme or poetry or lyrics, or, you know, or did it just range like from less detail to more detail? And you had to kind of work off of that.
It was literally just that, whatever you felt comfortable sharing.
Oh my gosh.
And one of the ones that I can share, and it's a really amazing story. There's a song called Just a Little Spark, which was the end result. But I got a letter from a very young lady who was basically saying she's at the age of 17 now and her life is nowhere near where she thought it was going to be. And she had a lot of issues with, you know, the family life and, you know, the kind of things you have as a teenager, but there was a whole different ball game in play as well. There was obviously other emotional elements which were really pulling at the strings. You know, she didn't go into that, but it was very clear that that was going on. And she said that there was a song by Paramore called Last Hope. I'm sure it's called, a song called Last Hope. And that changed her life. Hmm. And that was something which, you know, and I remember writing those lyrics in there because I was like, oh, you need to see that you are... Well, to me, it felt like someone who could see a turn and do something, and maybe this will help shape her future into something, you know, being more alert of what the things that she doesn't want in her life and the things that she does want in her life. She actually replied on Instagram a couple of years later and just said, like, I'm so thankful for the song.
Oh my gosh.
We follow each other, and I just kind of like every time she pops up, and I just see like happy moments and things. I mean, of course, there's still going to be challenges and everything in life, but it's just I have a really like a warm spot in my heart for her and all that happened, and I feel like I'm just like a fly on the wall of this kind of thing, and it was incredible, really, really.
Oh, that's incredible,
insightful.
So music can be obviously very personal. I would imagine as a songwriter. What's the difference between writing something personal based on experience and observation versus taking somebody else's situation and ideas and trying to, like you said, you don't want to have your imprint on it too much. Mm. What's the difference in that in terms of a process or mindset?
So I developed a particular way to write those songs. I actually tried to use their words, reworked it back, and then would finish them. But, you know, if it was like a rhyme kind of scheme that I was going to go for, they kind of like gave me the rough sketches of what the lyrics were going to be. I just created the melody that I thought fits the notion of what they're saying, because that's the best thing I could do. I was kind of like, well, if I stick close to what you're saying, I'm sure like the aim is near enough correct. So that was that. And the reason why that was useful for me as a songwriter, you can kind of maybe try and be too artistic with what you want to do, or you try too smart or too, you know, pull out something that is just maybe jarring the listener from what the meaning of the song actually is. So, you know, sometimes if something comes easy and it's quick, it's obvious and it's good for the song. Don't worry about that. That's okay. If you don't always have to work really, really hard for the result. But that taught me just to kind of be okay with sometimes the answer being literally in the email that was sent to me, and
yeah, don't overthink it. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Songs for Strangers. That are we able to listen to that on Spotify or YouTube right now?
Yeah. Yeah. That's out. Everywhere. I'm not sure what's out on YouTube in terms of, because there was demos that I released for the people who were like, I wanted to show them that the process was happening, you know, so it's not just a dead end thing. So I did release them like weekly, just to make sure that, you know, we are still interacting with each other. But yeah, you can stream it on all major platforms and things like that. Yeah.
All right. So this is, it's crazy. Cause if I had to name one artist, but let's do three that are sort of regularly in my rotation of, you know, top artists on my, you know, Spotify streaming or whatever, it's Sufjan Stevens, Damien Rice, and Gregory Alan Isaacoff.
What for you? So, or did you read my list?
I don't think so. So that's awesome. I mean, I could totally see you, not that you're going to want to be an opening act forever, but at least to start, I mean, you could open for any of those guys, right?
How
cool would that be?
That'd be amazing. I actually saw Gregory Alan Isaacoff play in a room of about 80 people in London. It was near enough the MT Northern Hemisphere tour. And I spoke to him briefly. I was so shy. I was so, so shy. And I just wanted to kind of, in one word, just say thank you for everything without coming across incredibly cringe or something.
Sure. Yeah.
But I saw him like do something with music, which was so contrasting of maybe Damien Rice. Like the two, they work in a different way. Damien Rice's vocals and the way that he gets to his songwriting, it feels so free flowing and kind of like water that's just moving along, and you end up somewhere and you're like, oh, I didn't see this coming. Not to say that Gregory's as rigid or anything like that, but Gregory uses a lot more traditional instruments, but in a way more inventive way. So I guess they both kind of fill each other's like gaps in a way where I'm like, oh, this is incredible. But I'm so impressed that you're, I say impressed, I just, I'm blown away that your list is pretty much the same as mine. Yeah.
That's, and obviously Sufjan. That's wild. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, we'll get to Sufjan. So I've only seen Isaacoff open for the Lumineers. I think I have tickets to him later this year, I think at Red Rocks in Colorado, which is
that's my dream.
One of the world's best venues. But what was crazy about seeing him with the Lumineers, obviously I'm a huge Lumineers fan, and so those are big stadium yeah. tours, and it was on the Brightside tour, and it was wild because, you know, he was up there with his band, you know, guitar, banjo, incredible. Whatever, and everybody's there pretty much to see the Lumineers, and so
yeah,
he's opening for this big rock band, and I'm just looking around going, everybody here that's like talking and not paying attention is completely missing out.
Yeah.
You know, but it's kind of a shame, but like hopefully that got his name out, and hopefully he's leveraged that. Obviously he's successful, you know, by himself. Yeah. But that was, I'll never forget like looking around going, these people don't have a clue how talented this guy is on stage right now, you know.
But it's I feel like the thing I love about Damien and Gregory Alan Isaacoff is that they're on their own rotation of what they're doing with albums. They don't have a scheme of it's a, you know, every other year or anything like that. And I feel like maybe it's the songs that they come and then the album forms and they don't know how much time's gone, but now it feels right. You know, maybe that's me just putting a lot of creativity or, you know, stuff in there. But it's funny that you say about the Lumineers tour, because that came here and I wasn't able to go, but I have a soft spot for the Lumineers as well. And I remember I did a cover of, it was like a quick little reel on Instagram of this, I can't remember which song it was now. It was one of the middle kind of albums, not Salt in the Sea, but something like that. And they shared it on their own page.
Nice.
And I remember being confused. I was driving in my car and my phone just kept going like buzzing and buzzing. And I thought it was like a dodgy charger that, you know, you need to clean it or something. And then I saw that they posted out, and, you know, they do that for a lot of other artists as well. And I think that's such a beautiful thing when there's these big, big, big artists, because they're colossal. The Lumineers are so big. But the fact that they share that kind of stuff, and there's these small moments that they give to their fans who are musical, it warms your heart, because they don't need to do anything like that. But yeah, I have a soft spot for them too.
So you, in 2023, you released a handful of singles, right? Any ones stick out to you in terms of being more, you know, meaningful, or if someone again, hopefully watches this or listens to this and is like, okay, which is the track that you want them to kind of start with on the ones from last year? What would that be?
Yeah. So I kind of found myself gravitating towards a bit of maybe a bit more of an evolution of my sound, bit more of a different landscape, because you can create in one place for a while, which I was in for a bit, and then something new just pops in and it just makes you want to write more and more and more. A track that did that for me was Fire. I released Fire maybe September or October last year, and the response to it was really incredible. And it's quite funny because I didn't think it was a big change in my sound or anything. And then I met a couple of my friends, a couple of weeks after it was out, and some people who you know, listened to the music, and they were just like, we love the new sound. And I was like, there's a new sound? I was like, I was just following what I was enjoying. So I think that's kind of maybe a bit of a coordinates for where the sound's going. I just had a lot of fun in the studio with Mike Curtis, who I work with exclusively, pretty much, on that track. We just pushed a lot of our comfort zones with it, and things that I remember. There was this pedal for a guitar part, and he just said, "Oh, that pedal over there is very it's very hard to tame," because he was recording someone a couple of days before, and he was kind of effectively telling me, "Oh, it was a long day because of that pedal."
Oh no!
And I was like, about 20 minutes later, I think we need the pedal. I think we need the pedal because it's sticking out like a sore thumb now. There's something about it. Why is it coming up in this conversation for now? From how we approached that song from the front to back, it was discovering things without thinking, trying to like quieten the analytical side of your brain and heightening the creative side. And what we ended up doing was he was on the floor having to like tame it as I was, all these effects were coming through. And if you hear the guitar on its own, it sounds crazy. But in the song, it just glued everything together. So
oh
it was, But yeah, so I reckon Fire is something which...
Fire is good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And I did a song with an amazing artist called Tasha Robertson called When I Find You. That was also a similar kind of process of just throwing paint at the wall and just seeing how much sticks. And also the sign of it going well for me and Mike in the studio, I think, is we can't really tell what the process was. We will just say, I just remember then there being a lot of solutions and not problems. So yeah, those two, I would say if you're out there wanting to try new songs or things, but yeah.
No, that's awesome. So the song that I talked about earlier off of Indie Folk Central, I think it was called Mountains.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and hopefully you're going to play that for us after we talk. But yeah, tell us about that and the inspiration for that one.
Yeah, so Mountains was actually a song that I wrote, and I couldn't really piece it all together properly. I had all the pieces, but it just couldn't make them fit in time for my first album, which is called The Optimist. And it's strange because I had to learn how to actually sing and play that song. It was actually a lot more simpler and it just needed less. And in 2020, obviously that was a very, it's an incredibly challenging time for everyone. It was, life just stood still and a lot of us just, we didn't know what to do with that. And there was some damage that can never be changed from it, unfortunately. But Mountains kind of showed itself then. I remember sitting down one day just late at night, really, really missing music and missing everything about it. Like, you know, I didn't really know who I was from that, as many people going through their struggles would have, you know, the identity gets challenged like heavily. And I was just playing it and it was more just about it being about hope. I remember just writing, changing some lyrics and some melodies and being like, this, I need something to just be kind of a little ember of hope that you can just harness. And you know, and I had to work remotely with Mike, and I remember luckily we'd done all the core bits in his studio, so we could add like the kind of textural bits, which,
oh, nice.
You know, which you don't have to be that panicky about. It's actually more about the vibe and, you know, your personality and those bits. And I was able to finish it off at home And I remember there's something I've done in that track which makes me, it's like a little memory. So every time I play it or I hear it, there's something that I've put in there to help me, to remind me of how I felt in that moment. And I don't know if you remember, but I think Tesla, they, or SpaceX, they shot up a rocket or something in June or July or something like that. And I remember saying to Mike, can you get the audio of that and put it in the track?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so in the middle of the, there's a middle eight where there's just something happening. There's this kind of rumble that happens and it just goes. And that I've put in there as a little bit of a nudge to me of being like, be thankful for what you have now again with music. And I remember missing so many things. And so I'm so thankful for when that happens. I go, oh, you know, I get to play, I get to see my friends again. There's no lockdowns. There's all these things that, you know, you quickly forget of that stuff. So yeah, Mountains was kind of born out of Embers of Hope. And then amazingly, when it got released, it did that for people who I know. And I think that's the best thing about music, when it's connecting with people, not necessarily what you were trying to say, but something that they really want to hear or something that they would love to have in their lives. You know, they can see themselves in the song. And if you could leave space for someone to see themselves in a song, I think that's really, really good creative writing. It's yeah. So I think Mountains, I'm just lucky that the process happened and it's out there. So yeah, I'm just thankful for it already.
No, and I'm thankful for it. And I know thousands of people are. It's really good.
And I just wanted to say thank you so much for making all this happen. It's been one of the nicest Mondays at my house that I've had for a long time. Not like it's bad, but you know, you get used to the coffee routine and stuff like that. So this was a nice little bit of spice. Thanks.
No, thank you.
I stroll into the darkness. Seems my mind wants it to keep me alone. I wasn't scared, if I'm honest, though my eyes started to see the folds. Oh, every day and everywhere, you could see a new sun rising ahead up through the air. Calm the seas, you could tear down your mountains and leave your mind at ease. Then I saw the smoke, it rose high in the air, sealing up our hope. But if we dare to dream, I'm sure we could see a new sun rising again up through the air to calm the seas. It could tear down your mountains and leave your mind at ease. I could tear down your mountains and leave your mind at ease.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us too. Until next time, stay curious.